an ever-changing world, Off Hollywood Media presents a voice of truth and inspiration, resonating a vibration of love and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions, as we, as one, strive for higher and higher levels of consciousness, always remembering life changes. And now, your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. I am so excited about today's show, and I know I always say that, and I always mean that. As a matter of fact, before the show, hours before the show, it was this morning, I was talking to our guest, and I got a little teary-eyed, actually, because as I hung up with him, I realized that because I had a desire to be host of a show, and because Dorothy and Mark had a desire to produce a show, we have this beautiful man on our show, and we get to help him put out this message, which hopefully helps you all and the planet. And I thought, wow, if we all do what we're here to do, we are so aligning beautifully and making things happen in such a beautiful way. And our guest, who I'll introduce in a moment, is Sequoia Trueblood, who is a Native American elder and storyteller, and I can't wait to have him share with us the stories that he's going to share with us. And so I'm so glad that our producer Dorothy got him for the show today, or was able to get him, because he travels all over the world sharing this beautiful message. As a matter of fact, just came back from Europe, where he toured in 6 different countries sharing this message. So that's a beautiful thing that comes from our beautiful lands. Although he won't be joining us today from the United States, he'll be joining us from Canada, which is part of our beautiful lands and, of course, part of our beautiful world. I also am excited because we have a new microphone at Life Changes. You know, it's interesting. Sometimes if we just listen, the answers are there. So our audience has been telling us what we need and what they want and what you all want. And we've been told a lot of wonderful things, actually. Thank you. Thank you for keeping those coming, because they mean so much to us. And we've been told that with a better microphone, we could hear you better. So here we are. That's been fulfilled. Looking forward to fulfilling as many other things as we can for all parties involved. And, you know, we're listening. We're really listening, because as much as so much of what we do here is share information, we also have information shared to us, and we're listening. And that's a little bit of what I wanted to talk about today, ironically. I'm thinking of a friend of mine whose mother-in-law walked in one day with a little rash on her arm. And in front of his wife, the lady's daughter, he said to her, you know, let's just call her, let's say, Sally, just to protect her anonymity, because it's not her fault. There's no fault to put here. It's just a story that might help us. I know it has helped me. As a matter of fact, it's helping me as we speak with certain things that are going on in my life. And so, coincidentally or not so coincidentally, as I'm thinking of this situation, like, why is this person not listening? I thought of this story. So this friend of mine says to his mother-in-law, you know, there's this homeopathic lotion that if you were to put it on, I bet that rash would go away really quickly. And she said, oh no, I already have an appointment with my doctor and on Monday or what have you, and I'm going to take whatever he tells me to take or do whatever he tells me to do. So this friend of mine just stopped talking. And then about a week or so later, they saw each other again, and the rash was worse. And my friend asked Sally what was going on, if she had gone to her doctor. And she said, yes, I don't understand. It's getting worse. I think I need to make another appointment. And so this friend of mine said, you might want to try this particular product, which should help a lot. And she said, oh, no, I'm sure he'll check the dosage or give me something different and better. And nothing, and that was that. So the next week he saw her, the rash was clear all the way up her arm and had covered so much of it that it was quite embarrassing, and she was horrified and mortified and just really upset about it. And my friend said, you know, there's this product. And she said, oh, no, I've already made the appointment with my doctor, with a different doctor, actually, because this is requires a specialist. So the week after, this friend of mine saw his mother-in-law, Sally, we're calling her, and the rash was almost gone. And this friend of mine said to her, how did it go away? And he said, did the doctor find the right thing for you? She said, oh, no, I was talking to my friend Anne, and Anne recommended this homeopathic remedy. As soon as I put it on, I just started to watch it go away. It's amazing. You should try it or buy it in case you ever have something like this happen to you. And this friend of mine looked at his wife, the lady's daughter, and they both looked at each other, and the wife shrugged, because that's the same homeopathic remedy that my friend had been recommending to his mother-in-law since the moment he saw the rash on her. But not only was she not listening, she couldn't hear him. And sometimes we are not the people that other people can hear. So it's interesting, because I was correlating that with this old Japanese Buddhist philosophy or saying that says, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And I've questioned, does the teacher just poof appear when the student is ready? Which could be the case, that a person walks into one's life when one is ready. Or does the person recognize the teacher when the person is ready? So in this case, the teacher, my friend, for my his mother-in-law, was there all the time. And so was the help, the medication, the homeopathic remedy, whatever. It was there all the time, but the student, Sally, we're calling her, didn't see it, didn't hear it, didn't recognize it. But then again, he wasn't her teacher, because the other friend, poof, appeared when she was finally at wit's end, and what she was doing wasn't working, and she was able to hear her friend. Maybe her friend spoke in a language that she understands. Maybe she had a different respect for her friend. Maybe she sees her son-in-law as a child or much younger, or of a different generation, or of crazy ideas or something. So who knows? But I was thinking of a friend of mine that I'm working with in a certain business, that just can't hear me, that just can't see, that she's running into a brick wall. And I'm thinking, I'm your teacher. Don't you see it? I'm here to help you. And then I thought, maybe I'm not the one that she can hear. Maybe she's not ready. Or maybe, just maybe, she's my teacher, and I'm not seeing it. So I'll leave it at that. And remind everybody that we're listening to, well, you're listening, I'm talking on Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network. And I am Filippo Voltaggio, happy to be of service by hosting Life Changes with Filippo tonight. Now, of course, you can learn more about us by going to our website at lifechanges.ws, and also find us on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, all over the place, having a lot of fun, having some great conversations with all of you. Of course, you can also listen to this show in our archives at the moment, which are free, at lifechanges.ws. And for those of you who like what you hear and want to share this with your friends, please do. And please do connect with us. We love hearing from you. Our guest tonight is Sequoia Trueblood, who is enrolled with the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. He has contributed selfishly for many years in Canada and the United States and around the world as a role model for healthy leadership, bringing peace and joy to the hearts of many. As a ceremonial pipe carrier and with an, quote, off-the-grid style in his work, he offers something most have never experienced, the genuine guidance of a supportive, profoundly inspired, and diversely experienced elder. His consistent ability to touch wounded hearts and soothe troubled minds with compassion and wisdom has endeared Sequoia to both Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people alike. He has a varied background in leadership capacities within Indigenous peoples' contexts, as well as Western institutions, including the U.S. Army, World Bank, Institute of Noetic Sciences, Harvard University Program for Extraordinary Experience Research, and Corrections Canada. Currently, he spends most of his summer living from the Kankurwa Medicine Lodge at Cross River Wilderness Center. I am so honored and we are so happy to have Sequoia Trueblood on the show. Sequoia, welcome.
Thank you. And you were both teachers, one to the other. That's how it is in this earth. Yeah, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
I knew you would have an answer, and I'm so glad you shared that. Thank you.
Well, you already knew the answer.
Oh, but I've been
fighting. It was a nice story, though.
I'm sorry?
I said you already knew the answer, but it was a nice story to hear.
Okay, thank you. But I was saying I've been fighting, and ironically, that might be a good place for us to start, because we've been fighting ourselves, haven't we, all this time?
Well, yes, we have. You know, we got a way of calling that judging ourselves. And, you know, we've forgotten who we are. And we're on a path of returning to that. You know, we've got an oral history that says that long ago we turned our back on the original teachings. And we've continued down that path since that time, believing we were walking toward Creator. And all along, we've been walking away from Creator.
Mm.
And we get to a place in our life eventually where we go, I don't know. I don't know what to do anymore. And as soon as we say that, we turn around on the path, and Spirit can work fully in our life. So we give that opening when we say, I don't know. When we say, I know, I know, I know, there's no room for any help to come in and give us any guidance.
Hmm. So not only have we been judging ourselves and we've been walking away from Spirit, but and fighting ourselves, we've been fighting others, and in essence, that is ourselves, but we're outwardly, aggressively fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
that's because...
Go ahead.
No, please.
You know, what looks like fighting ourselves and fighting each other, we can translate it into something else here. One of the main reasons that we sacred two-leggeds are on this earth right now is that we're here to engage in processes which allow us to help heal and resolve the unresolved issues that our ancestors have left here for us in this consciousness.
Hmm.
So if we're here to resolve the issues, in order to be able to resolve the issues, we have to be aware of what it is we're resolving. So we enter into those situations. It's not what it looks like. We enter into those situations, and we get ourselves in the arguments. We get ourselves into places of looking at differences And in this way, we work through the situations, and eventually, we'll come to that place where we're able to see your little story there, and it's how the other side of the relationship has always been there to be a mirror for us, to see who we are. That's the sacredness and holiness of these relationships, that if there's a person before us screaming and yelling, we've been taught to scream and yell back. And we've had that model to us as we're growing up. So we scream and yell back, the situation continues. And eventually, after we do this long enough through experience, and this I'm talking about my own life, you come to the place where you see what a gift the other side of that relationship is. I don't care what it is, but it's a gift. It's not there to control us. It's there to reveal us to ourselves.
Mm.
So if that other side of the relationship is upset, screaming and yelling, the only way we can be helpful to that relationship changing is for us to come to the place where we recognize what the other side of the relationship needs is a mirror of peace, a mirror of love. So we start working on that in our life and becoming that to those ones who come before us screaming and yelling. And eventually, that power of acceptance, that power of thankfulness, that power of just being able to help someone take a look at peace will cause the other side of the relationship to alter also. I watch it all the time. That's exactly how it happens.
Up until now, I would say that, at least in the culture that I've been brought up in, that this would be considered weakness.
Right.
But you're saying this is the utmost strength and power?
Yes, it is. That's we're in our strength then. When we're helping, change occur on this earth and moving to that place of peace, sure.
Hmm. Okay, so you talk the world over about the first people and how in the beginning we were a people of oneness. And so I'd like
right.
to hear a little bit about that, but then mm-hmm. when you talk about what our ancestors did that we are now paying for, so to speak, that doesn't sound like people of oneness. So somewhere along the line, something must have happened that turned everything around.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got to remember, too, this is all spirit working. All of this, even what we, what we call the physical is the greatness of spirit working. We came in, to this physical plane. It's that invisible spirit. And when we came in, then we took on a human body and we became spirit made visible. And we wanted to diminish that part of ourselves and continuing to, call it the physical and, it's not as in its fullness as spirit it is. Everything is spirit and there's nothing physical that can exist on this earth unless that invisible spirit is there first. So we've come in here in this way to engage whatever situation is put in front of us. In my life, I don't engage anything anymore except what's right there, what's right in front of me in that way. And that's about all I can really deal with effectively. I don't go a month at a time, a week at a time, and a day at a time. It's just that moment that I'm in and giving myself fully to that moment and engaging it and allowing that moment to show me where I am.
Hmm. Now, you talk about your experience and your life, and mm-hmm. you also obviously have the wisdom as an elder of your tribe and many tribes, because I know you work with them, of indigenous people and Native Americans. So what would you like to say to us today if we were able to hear you?
Well, I don't know if it's what I'd like to say. When I'm put in a situation where I'm asked to say something, I just turn that over to the grandmothers and grandfathers and say, okay, I'm to speak here. What is it I'm to share? And that's how, you know, I work in these moments. But I can share a little bit about my life because, you know, I've had these experiences in life, these experiences that have brought about growth that would look to many like it was going in just the opposite direction. But, so I don't know if you are aware of Sita in the Hindu way of looking at things. When she left this Mother Earth, she saw all the pain and suffering that was here. So she reincarnated herself into a family and into a community where the pain and suffering was at its extreme. So she could be an example to others that we can live in peace in the midst of this fire of change that's swirling around this earth right now. Whatever's going on around us, we can be an example of peace. So on this earth, for us sacred two-legged, it takes many experiences usually to get to that place. So I was born into the heart of pain and suffering. I was to deal with it, to be able to share about how it works later. I was born on a farm in Oklahoma in 1940. I'm 70 now. And I was born into the heart of pain and suffering there. In 1940, Indian people were considered animals in Oklahoma. Hmm. And my father was an animal, according, you know, to what the government had to say about it. On the other, my father was Choctaw, Cherokee, and Chickasaw. On the other side of the family, on my mother's side, it was English, German, Scottish, and Irish. And I had a German grandmother on that farm, and she was very upset that her daughter had married an animal, my father. And so she was successful in running him, you know, away from the farm. And then every day of my life, for as young as I can remember, I was hit every day with switches quite often until I bled. And that was my grandmother's attempt to beat the Indian out of me. You know, while these kinds of things were going on, I was never upset with anybody, never mad at anybody. I wasn't even aware there was another way to live. So even as a young child, you find yourself coming into that situation like it's just going to happen, and you become aware that you live through it. So my grandmother would even get to the point sometime when I wouldn't quit crying that she'd take me outside and hang me up in a tree. And, of course, later on in life, I became a sun dancer. So she was preparing me for lots of things. Then at some point, too, she had told me my father had died in an accident down in Arizona, so I would just quit asking about him. Now, when I got to be 8 years old, the Catholic priest came and got me and put me in a residential school in Muskogee, Oklahoma. All of a sudden, my family was gone. I had no explanation, nothing, only now here I find myself in a residential school in Muskogee, Oklahoma. I'm wearing a little military uniform with a military-style hat, and every afternoon after class, I'm walking around doing close-order drill with a weapon on my shoulder.
Did you say at 8 years old?
At eight, right.
I didn't know we did that in this country at 8 years old. Wow.
Yeah, but it was going on. I was part of it. And and then also the Brothers of the Sacred Heart, who were running that operation there, this place was called St. Joseph's Prep. It was their job to beat the Indian out of us. Same thing. So I got to where I could endure any kind of pain and not, you know, even consciously feel it anymore. It just became part of my makeup. And eventually, my mother showed up, who I hadn't seen in, you know, 6 or 7 years, and she took me out of that school. I went into a school in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Now it was the Sisters of Mercy's turn. So the same kind of thing going on. And I had a very extraordinary experience in my life during that time. I was a sophomore in high school. I think I was about 15 then. One of the young people in the school where I'm now going asked me to go duck hunting. I'd never been duck hunting. I'd never used a gun. And so we go out on this lake in January in a duck blind. There's two women who come with us. And we get in the duck blind. It's dark. We push off into the lake. There's a light crust of ice on the top. And the sun's coming up. And the two women are sitting in the back of this little duck blind. The door is only like 2.5 feet tall. You just got to squirm through it to get in there. They see the decoys on the lake, and they think they're the real ducks. So they come forward, and as soon as they come forward, the duck blind flips upside down in this icy lake.
Mm.
And the next thing I know, I'm screaming and yelling, however you do that underwater. I was frantic. And the next moment, I was warm, and I was comfortable, and I'm looking around, I'm underwater, and I'm going to myself, I'm breathing underwater. And my whole life flashed in front of my face, everything that had happened, things that were to happen. And this voice with this light said, Sequoia, you're okay, you're being taken care of.
Hmm.
And at some point, and I was comfortable, you know, I had no desire to go anywhere else. But then all of a sudden I surfaced in the lake. One of the guys and one of the girls had made it to the shore. The other woman sitting on top the duck blind, I tried to get her to jump off into the water, but she couldn't do it. She couldn't swim. And so I crawled up there with her. And eventually, you know, a lot of things happened there, but eventually we got into shore. But that was a major situation in my life right there, where I became aware when I was 15 that I was infinite eternal spirit.
Mm.
And I'm aware now that's who we all are, every one of us. Infinite eternal spirit doing these jobs we've been given to do in the service of creation. So from there, I went, as soon as I was 17, I joined the military. I didn't know what to do with my life. I was already in that place, not knowing what to do. I went down, I joined the military. And it was in the military when I started developing self-esteem. I started, developing the awareness, that I could actually lead and do things. In the residential school, it was always, you'll never amount to anything, Sequoia. You're too stupid to go to university. These things are never going to work for you. Don't ever try to do that. So I believe that. It was in the military that, I was 17 when I joined, that I found that I had these leadership abilities, and they recognized this too. And within a very short time, I was in officer's candidate school, becoming a second lieutenant. Not too long after that, as a Green Beret, I found myself in Southeast Asia.
A Green Beret. Hmm.
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
We never know where we're going to end up on this path. I had no idea that I would be doing any of those things that I've mentioned. But all of this had to do with me acquiring certain experiences in my life so I would be able to help others see their way through what they call difficulties or differences. To me, those things are only similarities in disguise, because there's only one spirit. were the many faces of that one spirit. And every time we do something, we have an effect on every one of those faces through creation.
Hmm.
So a little bit about, you know, what got me into this place. And at one point there in Vietnam, we were in a camp where we were under attack all night. And it was my responsibility to go out and get the dead body searched. And when I started looking through the wallets of these North Vietnamese soldiers, I was finding the same thing I had in my wallet. I was finding the letters in their wallets that said, "We miss you, we love you, we're praying for your safe return."
Mm.
And I'm there looking at them, realizing, you know, they're never going to see their families again. And all of a sudden, I just had this awareness that what am I doing?
Mm.
I'm killing my brothers and sisters, and it's happening over a philosophy that I don't even understand.
Wow.
And I started crying there, and I was in this light again, exactly like I was in that lake. And I was warm, and this voice said, "Sequoia, you're okay, you're being taken care of." And I never carried a weapon after that. I've never hunted, I've never needed to. So my entire life went through a major change there. Another thing that happened to me that had a great impact on my life, when we were running these special operations missions in Southeast Asia in the jungles, we would be required sometimes to stay awake 5 to 10 days at a time.
Wow.
And so we were issued drugs. They were packed right into our survival kits. There were jars of them sitting in the operations center. It was a super amphetamine. And I can remember this colonel giving me one and saying, "Take this, you know, you're going to need to stay awake tonight." So I took it, and it was like, you know, I put the cape on and almost became Superman. That I had no fear of anything. I was aware that whatever I was going to do was going to work out just fine. And so as I went on, and over 2.5 years in Southeast Asia, I kept doing these amphetamines, and I eventually became addicted to them, but I didn't know it until I got back to the United States. And then I was in such pain when I came back that I started doing other drugs. I did every drug imaginable to human beings over an 11-year period.
Mm.
And I was lost out there, but I was also learning about being lost, which was important in the work that I'm doing now. So I thought I was lost anyway. I tried to kill myself at one point. They wouldn't let me do it. I'm talking about the grandmothers and grandfathers. I was out for 24 hours, and then I came back. And so I screamed and yelled at God for a while, and I said, "Look, if you won't let me take my life and get out of here, I need some help. I want these drugs out of my life." A week later, I was arrested, and I knew that was the answer. And I ended up at Leavenworth Penitentiary. And so I got to spend 2.5 year sentence there, but it was actually the best thing that could have happened to me, because they'd started a drug and alcohol center there, a rehabilitation center, the first one, I believe, in any prison in the States at that time. And I just had excellent help. I mean, one of my teachers in there who helped run this, what they call the mental hygiene facility, he was a Zen Buddhist monk. So I learned Zazen meditation from him.
Oh, wow.
As soon as I learned that, my entire life changed. That's when I learned about acceptance. I had, you know, this opportunity to accept things as they are and enjoy myself or be miserable. And with the help of this meditation, I ended up having a great time in prison. I had fun in prison. Yeah. So, anyway, before I got out of prison, they had me teaching Zazen meditations to the other inmates in there. And another interesting thing that happened in my life that was very influential is that one day I was called over to the mental hygiene clinic. And I'm walking down the hallway, and there's this little black man walking toward me, and I go, this guy's about to run into me. And I tried to get out of his way, and he walked right up, and he put his finger in my face. He says, Sequoia, you're Sequoia. I had a dream about you, and in that dream, your face was in the center of the circle, and the outside circle was filled with all those faces that are here to help you do what you're given to do.
Wow.
And so this guy, he was from Haiti, and he had ended up getting a PhD in psychology. He had a hypnosis center in Dayton, Ohio, and he had shown that he could help the inmates get well. He had been sent down to where I was, and he would come there 2 weeks each year. In those 2 weeks each year that he was there, I was his assistant. He came from the voodoo tradition in Haiti. So I had this amazing being there.
You touched everything in this lifetime, didn't
you? Oh, listen. Yeah, teaching me things that, you know, I never could have learned about any other way. And then when I did get out of prison, he would come and stay with me in Kansas City for those 2 weeks instead of going back to the prison. So I learned his ways really well along the way. So... So anyway, and then the day I get out of prison, brother, I was someone who might eat three or four different meats at a meal. And the day I get out of prison, I just get guided to Kansas City, and I walk right into a woman's place that I'd met before, and it was now Swami Satchidananda's ashram.
Oh, wow.
So I walk right into the prison from this place. I'm an instant vegetarian doing yoga twice a day. So as part of all that process there, and it was like I always knew these things. I was aware that I was always aware of these things. It wasn't that I just learned it right there. This was opened up to me again. In a very short period of time, I was the yoga teacher for Unity School of Christianity there in Unity, Missouri.
Wow.
Doing that. And yeah. So then another part of the story I haven't unveiled yet. In the state of North Carolina where I got arrested, I was given a very short prison sentence of 42 years.
Wow.
This had to do with lots of things. I mean, of course, in special operations, I had a special intelligence clearance. I was aware of all these top secret operations that the government had been running and that I was involved in. And so now I'm kind of a loose cannon. I've been arrested. My name's on the front of newspapers all over the country. And so I got billed as a international drug dealer, which wasn't true at all. And so at the trial, I mean, of course, the judge had read the newspaper, so had the jury. But at the trial, they would not let me testify that, I'd become addicted to drugs through the use of amphetamines running missions in Southeast Asia. They said, strike that from the record. It has to do with national security.
Wow.
So I had to end up going to prison. So after I was in Leavenworth, 5 years after that, I'm still in Kansas City, bounty hunters came after me, got me back out to North Carolina, and where now I'm in the Central Prison in Raleigh, and they're saying, you're going to be in here 20 years before you ever get to a medium security. Well, the way things work...
Sequoia, excuse me for interrupting, but in any time during this... that voice that kept saying, you're all right, did you ever question, you know, do I look all right right now?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have looked all right, you know, during those periods of time, but I always was aware that I was getting help. I was always aware of it. And,
you know,
I didn't have any fear.
Some people might say, you know, with friends like that, who needs enemies? I mean, the help didn't seem like it was the kind of help you
needed. Yeah, but it all turned out good, see, and I learned something very, very helpful about being in prison. When they told me I wouldn't get out of there for 20 years before I'd get to a medium place, I found I didn't have any reaction to that. And this voice in my head just kept saying, you're not going to have to do this. You're not going to have to do this. So I wasn't surprised at all when just within 4 or 5 months, the guard walks up to me and says, the warden wants to see you. I get over there and they tell me they'd had a big meeting in the governor's office and some people had come down from Washington. None of it was ever recorded. And they said, you're out of here. Boom, I was out.
Wow.
And it just so happened I was released right next to the Cherokee Reservation in North Carolina. And an old elder there, Andy Ukama, he's known as the last shapeshifter in those mountains down there. The Smoky Mountains. He made arrangements for me to come out and help put together a year-long youth program where we took the Cherokee youth out into the mountains for a week to a month at a time.
Mm.
So I ended up doing that for 6 years, brother. I loved it, and those kids taught me so much about myself and how to be helpful.
And I'm sure you taught them so much. You know, Sequoia, I could listen to you all night, and I actually wish we could have the luxury of doing that today.
Mm-hmm.
We have just a couple more minutes left, and it's to get this story because it's so important for people to know that here you are. So many of us haven't had half of in our lives of what has happened to you,
mm-hmm.
and we're complaining, and mm-hmm. we're saying our life is just not right. And here all of this has happened to you, and you're saying it was all right and necessary for you to be here who you are and for you to be able to share what you're sharing with us. And so in the few minutes that we have remaining, please share with us more of your wisdom, if you would. Of the grandfathers and grandmothers.
Yeah, I'd like to say, too, and I want to honor these guys, the war veterans at Canada and the United States,
mm-hmm.
come back suffering, and the government still doesn't know how to take care of them. And
mm-hmm.
I found the way. So I've been doing, that kind of work also. And really what it has to do with is recognizing at some point that we can be thankful for everything.
Mm.
Now, everything on this earth, regardless of how we judge it through the intellect, every single thing on this earth came forth from the divine. Came forth from the divine. So that's why in Lakota, we can use that word washte lo, it's all good. See, it's all here for a good purpose. We're the ones who end up judging these situations before us as good or bad. It's generally the ones that we call the bad ones that are there to give us the best help. Now, I've made good friends with the devil. That one doesn't bother me, doesn't have any power over me. And how I did that, I called the devil into the garden one day, and I says, look, this is what's come to me, devil. I said, I love you. And I thank you, because that loving divine creator that made me also made you. And I recognize now that you've never done anything to hurt me. You walked before me with a silver tray that had the glitter world on it, and you would hold that out. And you never forced me to take anything. I'm the one that got attracted to that glitter world, and I'm the one who reached in there and took those things from that tray. So that got a whole lot of stuff out of my life right there when I realized that this one called the devil's here to help us too. I had a young man out on a vision quest, and when he came back in, he told me about this vision that he had had where he had met the devil, and then right after that he had met one, and he says, "What's your name?" And he says, "I'm God." And this young man, he was 14, he says, "You know, Sequoia, God and the devil look exactly alike." So,
wow.
So, it's not on this earth, it's not what it looks like, brother. Nothing is what it looks like. And
what? You know, actually, I'm glad to hear you say that, because you shared something with me today that I was happy to hear and actually somewhat surprised. But you said we're closer. You like to say that the world was made for peace, and you said
yes,
that we're actually closer than we think.
Uh-huh.
Can you illuminate us a little on that?
Well, you know, here's how it works: the path of peace on this earth. And I was given this in a ceremony when I was out doing some things on the West Coast where there had been some youth suicides. At 5:30 in the morning, I'm sitting there saying prayers for help for that day. All of a sudden, I saw the great circle of life, and I saw a triangle in that circle. And at the top of the circle, in the Mohawk language, it said, "Nyawogoa." That's the great thanks that fills creation. The bottom left leg of that triangle, it said, "Skona Goa." That's the great peace that fills creation. And at the bottom of the right leg of the triangle was the Mohawk word, "Gunarunkwa Goa," the great love that fills creation. And in an instant there, I was given like 25 different shape-shifting positions at the same time. But this triangle with the circle around it was the yantra of the path of peace.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we practice thankfulness in our life for things, and some it's easier to say acceptance, but thankfulness, acceptance, and forgiveness are all the same thing. And when we're living in that place over anything that comes before us, if we can be thankful that it's there teaching us something about ourselves, then what happens is we move from that place of thankfulness to the place of peace. We move right down to the bottom left leg of that triangle. And the only way to get to that place of peace is to be that person who is thankful, is filled with gratitude, is forgiving, is accepting. It's the only way. That's what we have to work on. You know, we have to work on it. And I tell people, even if you don't believe it, do it. Because that's what happened to me in prison when this old man in there said, "Sequoia, every day when you wake up, tell Creator thank you for this day. Your life will change." He says, "Do it even if you don't believe it." I said, "I don't believe it." That's where I was then. But I do it, and I do it with everything now. So practice that. Great thanks will always lead you to great peace, and that great peace will open up this creation to the fullness of love for you.
Wow.
That's the only thing that can happen.
You know, that them are powerful words, and mm-hmm. coming from you, especially knowing your story more now, it means even more. So I'm hoping that people will share this with their friends and family and acquaintances, and people can hear your story and hear what you've come to and who you are and the message that you bring. And I am so grateful and thankful that you have been sharing this with us here on Life Changes with Filippo. How do I say thank you in a native language?
Well, you can say thank you in that example I gave you there. The great thanks that fills creation is Nyawo Goa. It's like an NY sound at the front. Nyawo.
Nyawo Go.
Nyawo is thanks. Nyawo Goa is the great thanks. So,
well, then,
Nyawogoa.
A big Nyawogoa to you, and thank you for what you're doing out there and the message that you're sharing. Thank you for being with us tonight on Life Changes with Filippo.
Thank you, brother, and thank everybody who's listening here. I love all of you. It's not what it looks like. We're all going to the good place together. Nobody gets kicked out of the canoe.
Okay.
We're all going together. We came here as one. We're leaving as one. Yeah.
Well, we're certainly one today, and this has been, we've been together in this, and I'm so grateful. So with that, I'd like to also bring on our producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, who is going to give us some tools for change before we close the show here.
Thank you so much, Sequoia. You're really my brother, and boy, have we a lot to talk about. So, today has been one of the happiest days of my life. I didn't think that anything could top yesterday when we had our first Energetic Alchemy reunion with our most recent students who were having withdrawals after being away from this magical and mystical space for only 2 weeks. They couldn't wait to get back here to co-create some more miracles of love, compassion, and light. We needed someone to heal. So I called one of my dearest friends who had been suffering from depression for way too long. He has been confused and thought that what was making him tired and miserable was a disease his doctor had labeled as hepatitis C. However, what I know is that he was just a little bit out of integrity and a little bit out of alignment with his higher self. And I knew that he couldn't see how magnificent and awesome he really is. I also knew that this group of graduates were perfect choices to assist him in choosing to heal himself. And they were, and they did. I say heal himself because it's important to know that all healing is self-healing. Please remember this. All any healer can do for you is to assist you in accepting your own power to heal your mind, body, and spirit. Yes, we can move some powerful energies through you, but only if you will allow us to do so. What an incredible experience it was for all of us yesterday. My friend is unbelievably stubborn, almost as stubborn as I am. And he has been resistant to hearing how amazing he truly is. He's been unable to see himself clearly for the great gift he truly is to the planet. And this is one of the reasons I chose him as the healee for our graduates. They wanted to practice, and I knew that they hadn't worked on anyone who was resistant to receiving energy. So he was perfect for them. And they were perfect for him because they're truly master healers. For those of you listening out there who may not know what it is like to attempt to do energy healing on someone who unconsciously doesn't want to get well, let me tell you, it's not fun. It's sort of like trying to push water through concrete as if your life depended upon it. I'm so proud of our healers and our subject because neither gave up. He hung in there with them after I explained to everyone that he was indeed resisting, and mightily at that. So they pulled out modalities they didn't even know they had. One was using a lightsaber. It was quite awesome to watch. They were truly amazing. Their open hearts and compassion was astounding. My friend had brought a young lady with him who was going through a personal crisis of her own, and she was observing my friend's healing process. I asked her for permission to do a little healing on her, and she said, please. So I did, and just a few minutes, because she wasn't resisting, she burst into tears, and years of stuffed down emotions flowed out of her. I then took her into another room and talked with her for maybe just 5 minutes. And was able to clear up some major misconceptions that had kept her from living, laughing, and loving as we are truly meant to do. Then the two women healers came out and joined us, and by the end of my friend's session, we had a newly empowered female and a man who was finally willing to look at his life from a different viewpoint. I'd been praying for this awakening from the moment I met him, and had asked him several times if he would be just willing to look at things a tiny bit differently. And he'd always said very, very sternly, no way, because he truly believed that his way of looking at his life was what had kept him alive for over 27 years. And I always agreed that maybe it had kept him alive, but that it had also kept him very miserable. And that if he would just be willing to look at it a little differently, he would have an opportunity to not only be alive, but to live a joyful and an abundant life filled with unconditional love and compassion. What our graduates started yesterday with their love and healing energies, he completed today when he stopped by to have a conversation with me. And I asked him if he truly was ready to begin to love himself just a fraction of the way he loves me. He said he was. And at the end of our time together, he began the first day of the best years of his life. He not only became willing to take a look at his life from a little different perspective, he actually began doing it. And he made a major decision which will impact his life so magnificently that he will not only be able to complete his mission and purpose, he will help change the world by assisting thousands, millions in looking at their lives from a different perspective. My friend has chosen to see that he truly is the power in his world. He has chosen to become the change he wishes to see in the world, and he has chosen to help others do the same in a very powerful and positive way. He has broken free from the lies that we are told and that we tell ourselves because we are so programmed by society to believe them. He has chosen to step out of the old paradigm and is choosing to co-create a new one, which will assist others in seeing the truth, which will set them free. Congratulations, my precious friend, and thank you, my dear graduates, for your awesome and amazing work yesterday and for sharing your unconditional love, compassion, healing energies, and light with my friend and with his friend. Together, we co-created some miracles of love. I'm so proud of all of you. So thank you, Ken, Armando, Tim, Angel, and Angie. And a special thank you to my dear friend for your being willing to wake up. Until next week, please remember that each of you are the power in your world. You are the guru you've been waiting and looking for. You're the only one who can end your suffering, and you can only do this by beginning a love affair with yourself. Please choose to become a very conscious co-creator by making the most elegant choices possible. And never forget that you are powerful beyond imagination and that you are love, you are lovable, and you are truly loved.
Thank you. Dorothy Lee Donahue with the Tools for Change by Dorothy Lee Donahue. I think that's going to be the name somehow. In any event, wow, that's awesome. I wish I was here to have enjoyed that as well. But I'm sure there'll be many, many other times. And if you'd all like to find out more about what Dorothy is talking about, first of all, you can always visit her at her website, at our website for that matter, at lifechanges.ws. But then that'll direct you also to energeticalchemy.com. And learn more about the Energetic Alchemy workshops and certification. Energetic Alchemy Beyond Reiki, to be exact. So with that, that brings to a conclusion another exciting show. And I, again, I say exciting, too, because we have been wanting a Native American elder on the show to share his wisdom for so long. And finally, we were able to have one. And today was it. Today was the day for a lot of its, and I hope it is your day too. And the day is still young for some of us, so make sure if it hasn't been to go make it it. We'd like to thank again our guest, Sequoia True Blood. And if you want to learn more about him, do go to our website and learn more about him there or any of our past guests and our future guests for that matter. You can also keep the conversation going by visiting us on our website. You don't just have to wait for Mondays to roll around. And you can connect with us there on our website, through Facebook, through et cetera, et cetera. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems. Change your water, change your life, and love and miracles. And to learn more about them, visit our sponsor page on our website and click on their links. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and it has been my pleasure being of service by hosting Life Changes with Filippo tonight. I, along with our segment hosts and producers, Dorothy Lee Donahue and Mark Lejeune, and our engineer, Seth Hendrick, we thank you for joining us and being part of this show, part of this world, and part of the change we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes. Join us here every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and visit us on the web at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. And follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here next week as we consciously embrace and explore the only constant, life changes.